Yeah, hi, my name's Alan, I'm an addict.
Hi, Alan.
I'm an addict, I'm here. I would say probably 25% of the faces in this room this evening I recognise, which is quite a small percentage, really. It's great. There's so many new faces in this room. I don't often come to this particular meeting. The reason I'm saying that is because it kind of factors into the the sense of vulnerability I have set up here. I've sort of had this this ego-driven sense about me today that I'm like, Mr. NA, today. I'm kind of, I've got this, it's interesting. I've got these little areas of envy and jealousy that arise in my life these days, when I, connect with social media and I look at some of our fellows, and it's very easy, isn't it, to be a big fish in a small pond in Narcotics Anonymous, But I feel like one of the kind of bigger fish today, Sharing in Trafalgar meeting, doing a 40-minute chair, it's like, hang on. So I'm nervous. I've got two glasses of water here in my mouth. I've been sipping it since I've been sat here, and I'm dry as can be, and I feel exposed. I feel... afraid. Part of that is because I've been asked to share with you guys tonight, and I think with that goes a sense, a sense of responsibility, really, to share honestly, to share, about recovery, and to try and make sure that any newcomers or visitors to this group, newcomers especially, are not, don't walk out of this meeting afterwards thinking, I'm not going back there, And so, I was saying to Tony beforehand, there is a sense of responsibility that goes with, being a secretary at a meeting, or sharing in a meeting, and I'm just trying to take some ownership of that. My physical health isn't great at the moment. I'm in my 14th year of clean time in Narcotics Anonymous, and that's very precious to me. I'd be lying if I said that wasn't hard won, of enormous value to me. And that doesn't make me any better than anyone else sat in this room, or any other member of the human race for that matter, but it is precious to me, I believe clean time is quite hard won and very easily lost, from what I've seen. I don't have a relapse story in Narcotics Anonymous, and I don't want one. That's the truth. So the reason I say that is I've got out of my using quite scot-free in some respects, especially on a physical sense. I've seen some of our members come into recovery and struggle with, really, really serious health consequences as a result of either the lifestyle or the using that goes with it, and vice versa, or other stuff's happened in life and they've just had a rough deal, and I've been really fortunate on a physical level. And I'm ticking along, doing recovery, doing life, which have merged, incidentally. I'm not really able to separate, my life and recovery anymore. For me, it's all one. And I'm ticking along. I'm going through life, trying to do my best. And then life just said, "Hang on, Alan." Do you know what I mean? Out of the blue, I ended up with a health issue. It was a blood clot in my in my shoulder, in my arm, and it's knocked me knocked me off course, you know. It's just like I'm just ticking along and life's gone, hang on, Alan, you know, there you go. And I'm just rolling with it, really. The same as anything else that's ever come up for me in recovery. And, like, you know, I've just tried to roll with it, you know, bring it here a little bit and reach out perhaps a bit. And try and, you know, accept my lot. And this is another example of that. The reason I'm touching base around that is because it's, you know, I feel vulnerable. You know, more vulnerable than I normally would because, because I'm physically not 100%, and that's factored into me feeling extra vulnerable sitting here this evening, you know, kind of just exposing myself, you know, and trying to get honest and get real with you guys and try and show up, you know. It's really exposing sitting here, you know, and I feel vulnerable physically, and the two together just kind of make it a bit more significant for me. So that's that. It's I'm on the mend, you know. It's they're looking after me, and I'm really grateful for that. So you know, I've just spoke for 6.5 minutes on what I think is like very little, really. But you know another reason why I mentioned it is because I'm anxious, do you know what I mean? I'm an anxious person, and it's the sort of stuff I'd use on. That's why I'm saying it. It's the stuff that, you know, anxiety is a, you know, it's one of those kind of feelings, you know, that I've had all my life. It's like it's been a constant shadow, you know. I've never sort of been, you know, hospitalized through panic attacks or anything like that, but anxiety is just one of them emotions alongside many others that have had me over, do you know what I mean? And for me to be able to sit here and just own that, you know, without you know, worrying about what other people think, or without just doing a runner for the door, or without trying to numb it out with a chemical is significant in itself, really, you know. So yeah, I'm anxious, but that's okay. So the other thing is I've got to be on guard that I don't, in any way, in the eyes of you guys, reinforce this kind of fraudulent aspect to my personality that I also carry around as well, you know. So, you know, I come into contact with lots of newcomers, you know, on a daily basis. Usually, you know, I'm a massive, massive, massive advocate of the Narcotics Anonymous Fellowship. You know, if I wasn't an addict and I wasn't using this fellowship myself and I knew about it, I'd still be a massive advocate of it. You know, I just love what we do here and what this represents. And you know, I would be. You know, if I was talking to somebody who was struggling to get clean, I'd be, you know, what are you doing on a Friday night? Okay, you could do a lot worse than go to Trafalgar Square meeting. Do you know what I mean? Get yourself over there. The reason I say that is because I believe there's a strong committee here usually. It's got a good reputation. There's a lot of recovery here. Then what that does is that puts me in the realm of me starting to compare my recovery with other people's recovery. And this kind of phonyism can kind of rear its head, because my experience in recovery is a bit like the previous speaker shared. You know, I came in via a treatment center, or two or three, and you know, the long and short of it is I ended up in a 12-step treatment center, and H&I came in, carried a message to me, and when I left that treatment centre, I left, you know, with this sort of book here, the basic text and a where to find, really. And the truth of it is I had nowhere else to go. I really didn't, you know. I went back to my old flat, you know, where I'd used, and I was terrified of picking up. And I came to Narcotics Anonymous. The seed had been planted already, thankfully, and I had. I'm one of these addicts who, thankfully, hasn't really had much resistance to meetings, going to meetings. But what I've done is I've come to NA, and you know, I believe my experience is, I believe I surrendered to the drugs, you know, I surrendered to the drugs and to the chemicals more easily than I thought, to be honest. You know, that's my truth. You know, I don't have a story of my experience in my using was, I don't have a story that says that I tried everything to get clean, right? I didn't really try very hard to get clean. I think there was a part of me that couldn't really conceive of a plan B in life. For me, it was using and it was using and it was using. I couldn't see beyond that to ever really contemplate an alternate way. And because of that, I never really even tried much to stop, to be honest. It was more the intervention of other people around me that resulted in me ending up in a treatment centre where they, you know, they detoxified me again. And I found myself, you know, going into meetings. So I came out and My journey is one of surrendering to the using. Surrendering to this program has been a different ball game for me, you know. And I have to out that with you. I have to be really honest with my fellows, you know, that I don't run to this book. I don't run to the green and gold. I don't run to my sponsor readily. You know, I don't do that easily. You know, sometimes I do it because I'm in a lot of pain, and that's okay. Sometimes I do it because I'm working with sponsees and I don't want them to outdo me. I feel like a sense of responsibility to people I'm helping, you know, and I need to be on top of my game a little bit. And part of my motivation is to crack on with things, really, you know, so that I can, you know, you're a better guide, you know, where possible. Some of it is I want to look good, you know, the Mr. NAs again, you know. I wouldn't, you know, I'm not Mr. NA, by the way, but, you know. Sometimes it's just like, you know, I don't mind seeking your approval, you know. I look up to people in this fellowship, and if those guys approve of me working a program, then that's okay as well. I've dragged my heels through this program. That's the truth of it. You know, I had a good chat with my sponsor the other day about this, you know, and it's just really painful, really, for me to have to own the fact and connect to the fact that, you know, I'm good at not using. Do you know what I mean? I've gotten good at not using over the time I've been around. You know, I've kind of, you know, I'm stubborn around that. You know, I know how to not use now. I've learned through coming here how to not use. But when it comes to changing and growing and developing and you know, awakening spiritually, you know, it's just been painfully slow for me. It really has, you know, and it really just feels like two steps forwards, three steps backwards a lot of the time. So when I first came in and I looked at the steps on the wall, you know, I think the kind of searching and fearless bit scared me. But I think what scared me more than anything was this kind of 8 and 9 stuff, you know, because I was riddled with shame and guilt, you know, for the stuff I'd done while I was using to people, particularly those closest to me, you know, and the prospect of ever trying to amend that stuff and revisit that stuff terrified me. It really did and still does. So my journey has been come to meetings because I'm attracted to the honesty in these rooms. I know this is where I need to be. I've got no resistance around coming to meetings. Not using, I kind of accept. That doesn't mean to say I don't have thoughts of using or it doesn't seem like a good idea sometimes, but generally speaking, I've got my head around that one. I accept that, you know, the game's over with the chemicals. I can't do that. And I've got that kind of acceptance around that. You know, I've been doing some writing the last few days and weeks, and it's directly kind of targeting those fears that I came in with, you know, around revisiting that stuff. And in some respects, it's like it's really okay. You know, our literature, the Step Working Guide, is asking me a set of questions which is directly targeted at me addressing those fears that I came in with. Do you know what I mean? And I cannot believe I've neglected that part of my program for as long as I have. You know, it's really painful for me to have to own that. But I need to share that with you. You know, it's kind of goes back to this sense of responsibility that I felt that I have sitting up here tonight, you know, to kind of spout off a kind of, you know, a breakdown of the steps, a 1 to 12, do you know what I mean? But it's really important for me to not be a fraud as well. You know, I need to share with you honestly that I've dragged my heels through this program. I come in and I was so focused on trying to get my life back on track. You know, the first 3 to 5 years were heavily focused on me getting my life kind of back together on the outside, really, you know. And I kind of did the meetings, you know, I'd have a pray up, you know, I'd do service, I'd have a sponsor, and I'd kind of get by on this 1-2-3 stuff, really, you know. This 1-2-3 step 1-2-3 kind of helped me, you know. It wasn't until probably my 4th or 5th year in this fellowship when I really, you know, life really started to get painful. You know, I'd had a child, I went to back to school, you know, I got jobs, you know, I did all this stuff, and really, you know, I wouldn't really advocate people do this, to be honest, because I think I had the whitest knuckles in Narcotics Anonymous. That's the truth. I think, you know, I was just holding on, you know. It was a miracle, really, I didn't pick up. But I guess I had that surrender that I'm talking about. I guess I had that, you know. It's interesting, isn't it? If anyone's ever been to treatment, you get other people, you can find yourself sat in a room and you get other people forming an opinion between themselves about whether so-and-so's accepted their powerlessness yet or not. And I've never understood that, do you know what I mean? I'm the only one who can accept my powerlessness, do you know what I mean? And I think I'm the only one who can make that decision about whether I have or not. And my experience has been that I've surrendered. My addiction is more powerful than me. I get that. I just need to, you know, just be gentle with myself, really, around the fact that I feel a bit embarrassed sitting here with X amount of years clean time, saying that I'm only on my first ever step 9, and that's my truth, you know. So I guess within that there's two things. One is, you know, I wouldn't suggest that. I think if you've got time and you can, you know, I would get this stuff done. You know, it really has benefited me. Every step I've ever done in this fellowship has gently led on to the next one, do you know what I mean, and prepared me to work the subsequent step. And every step I've ever worked has benefited me, you know, wholesale, and you know, my understanding has often come a long while after actually doing any writing or sharing around it. But you know, the other part of that is I'm here for the long haul. You know, I truly believe that I'm here for the long haul, and this has not become this is not a race for me anymore. You know, I'm trying to put the stick down around my progress in this 12-step fellowship, which is based on a program that requires us to make the most of it by working the 12 steps. So I have to ease back from that and put the stick down, because if this program in any way ever becomes something that I use as a weapon with which to beat myself up with, then I don't want to know. You know, that's my using. You know, that's other things in life, you know, that I can use to bash myself up with. I need this program to be fully, you know, fully accessible, gentle, you know, and at a pace that I'm okay with. Do you know what I mean? And you know, I've got a sponsor at the moment who's fine with that too. So that's kind of, you know, that's where I'm kind of at. You know, my day-to-day, I restarted my day-to-day at about 2 p.m. You know, most days in recovery, you know, I like that. You know, I'll get up and I'll, and I've been signed off for work. I've been off of work for a few months, and it's been really tricky, to be honest. Really tricky to manage and accept. And I really had to be vigilant and look after myself. You know, I got up at 9 a.m. today, and the next thing I know, it was 2 p.m. And my day had not been used in the most loving and useful and productive way. I won't go into details because it's not relevant. But take my word for it. It wasn't the greatest first half of the day, but I think it was around 2 p.m. today I made a decision to just kind of reset my day, really, you know. And I reread the Just for Today, and then I got down on my knees and I prayed to a God that I understand less and less and less, and I'm okay with that as well. And I meditated and I picked the pen up and I wrote a bit more on my step nine. And then I did some self-care, you know, some physical self-care. And headed over here, do you know what I mean? So the reason I'm sharing that is because, you know, I had to tell myself, Alan, just do the next right thing. You know, I wasn't being very loving to myself. You know, my diet, the way I was acting and behaving the first half of the day, you know, I wasn't very happy. But I can change that at any time, and that's what another beautiful thing that I've learned here is that I can just do the next right thing. I can speak to someone and they can say something and it will just flick a switch in my mind and I'm back on the horse again, really. Do you know what I mean? And doing recovery. So what I'm going to talk about a little bit is I'm going to kind of rewind. And just tell you a little bit about, you know, I want you guys to identify with where I come from, you know, really. Whenever I share about you know my early experiences in this way, I often leave a meeting thinking that I've painted a really negative picture of Alan as a child and of Alan, you know, through schooling and Alan at home and stuff. And the other thing that crops up for me is this kind of this risk I run of apportioning blame, okay, to my parents, you know, or to the other caregivers in my life when I was young. And if I start doing that, then I kind of, you know, I recognize through the step writing that I've done to date that I run a real risk of reinforcing that I've been a victim of circumstance and I've been a victim of life, you know, and I know that doesn't serve me. So I need to sort of, when I'm sharing this stuff, I'm trying to practice tempering that, the way I frame it in a more balanced way. But you know, I mean, my parents, they live on the same road as me. I see them, you know, they're there, they'll do anything for me, you know, in terms of time. If I'm short financially, they'll bail me out. They'll make sacrifices. They'll look after my kids. They'll do lots of stuff for me, my parents, and I'm so grateful for that. And I think my parents were instrumental in getting me the support I needed when I needed it. You know, I mean, my dad literally wiped my bum for me when I was in a withdrawal once. You know, he's literally cleaned up my mess. You know, when I was an adult in a childlike state as a result of the mess that drugs made of me. So I need to really, really show appreciation for some of the people who have been there through all of my life. However, you know, my parents got it. You know, they got it wrong as well on occasions. And you know, from a very, very young age, you know, I was exposed to chemicals And I don't think that helped. You know, I don't think that helped. I don't want to blame my addiction on anything, really, but I do believe that for me, my truth is that didn't help me, that didn't serve me. And I'm talking fairly innocent stuff in some respects, like Alan, can you just light, you know, my mum's washing up and she's like, Alan, can you light a fag for me, please? You know, and I think the culture in my family in those days, in the 70s, perhaps, would have been that's quite acceptable, you know. I would have been about 5 or 6, maybe, you know, but got this kind of taste for this kind of smoke, you know, at a very young age. And then, you know, it's the same with alcohol. The culture about drinking in my family is very embedded. And I grew up in this drinking and smoking culture from a very young age. I grew up in a culture where it, difference wasn't tolerated in any way, you know. So it was very difficult for me. What I learned at home, what I took out into the school playground, put me immediately in conflict with those I encountered, you know, in my local community. And I just felt like I was running, you know. I didn't really, you know. And then there was my, you know, this kind of violence in the home as well, because my dad was a heavy drinker and my mum was a kind of, you know, just lost in her own fear, really, of my dad's mood, and therefore me and my sister were just kind of growing up around his stuff, and it led to me feeling very angry, very afraid, very embarrassed, very guilty. But I didn't know any of that, you know. As a kid, I didn't know I was experiencing that stuff, and I think, you know, it came to a time when, you know, when I was old enough, I could get outside and I'd just be off and running. You know, my experience, I was just off and running, you know. As soon as I could get out of the family home, I was out. And some of the stuff I got up to, you know, just filled me with shame. You know, some of the stuff I did as a kid is just not good, man. You know, it's not good. Some of the things I did to my peers, you know, to exert this control and power that I didn't have elsewhere, you know, really, really injured them, really harmed them. I just had this confusion and this, you know, this sense of being flawed and being bad from a very young age. Do you know what I mean? And I, you know, when I kind of, you know, and there was some other stuff that happened in my childhood from a very young age, you know, at the hands of extended family members as well, where my natural innocence was affected, you know. I didn't know I was ashamed, but I grew up just full of shame, and the drugs just took that. The drugs just took that stuff away. However, I didn't ever know what that stuff was, if that makes sense. You know, I just knew there was something not right about me. At least my emotional experience was that there was something not right about me. One of the things I've got from coming to Narcotics Anonymous is love. You know, and, you know, love comes has always come at me, and has come at me, you know, in different guises and in, you know, on different levels, and it's shaped differently, and it can feel differently, and it can, it's a big thing. And the truth is, somewhere along the line, I'd lost the ability to feel loved, you know. So I didn't feel lovable, I guess. And you know, and I behaved according to that sense. You know, I just responded to what was going on around me according to this kind of this inner bit that just didn't feel worthy of anything, I guess. And just acted out, man. I was just off and running, you know. And when the drugs came along, I was just ripe for it, you know. They just hit the spot, you know. And I could talk more about my drug using. You know, it wasn't, there was nothing really that glamorous about my drug use, and I had a couple of years where it was all right, you know, it was enjoyable. some of the social aspects of it was good. You know, at a time when I was, when I was a teenager, and I kind of it served me and it worked for me in ways other than, you know, numbing this kind of this sense of lack that I kind of had. You know what I mean? But you know, as a kid and as a teenager and as you know, I left school at about 13, I think. You know, I wasn't quite 14, and you know, everything was just like I couldn't really see beyond like the day I was in, you know, and everything was just, you know, it's great, you know, you guys have tried to, you know, the reading today about living in the moment and stuff, you know, and the only time I've ever really lived in the moment, I think, was it that time in my life, you know, because it was all about just being and you know, the truth of it is, I went through the whole range of drugs, you know, and the last 5 years of that, before I got clean at 30, the last 5 years was this kind of crack, you know, this crack and heroin, you know, stuff and scripts and consequence, really. That was never part of my plan. I always thought I was smarter than everyone else. I always thought I had a grip on life. I always thought I had control. A lot of my drug use was about control, you know. A lot of my behaviors now in recovery, the kind of addictive, obsessive behaviors are often about control. But back then, you know, I would take a chemical right to the hilt, you know. I would rinse it completely, and then as soon as it got to that scary, you know, scary place or dangerous place, or the consequences started to reveal themselves, I'd stop using it and I would replace it with something different. And I really thought that I was on top of my game because I was able to do that. I didn't understand that I was just replacing one for another all the time, and that was my get out. Because as I say, I had no plan B, but I didn't know that I even needed a plan B, if that makes sense. I just did, you know, I was just a product. When I look back, I was just a product of, you know, of this identity that I'd formed for myself. You know, I was just at the mercy of life, really. And I thought I was going to stop using everything at the age of 25 when my son was born. That was my master plan, you know, and it's just mad, you know what I mean? And the woman I was with at the time, I'd been with her for 10 years, and we had this kind of party using going on, you know. So it wasn't like your kind of crack and heroin codependent mental relationship stuff, do you know what I mean? It was like more of a ravey, you know, type setup. And when she got pregnant, she just stopped all the cocaine and the ecstasy and stuff and the drinking and the cannabis. She just stopped overnight, and that was, I think, probably when the penny started to drop, that I had a problem here, you know, because I couldn't stop, and that really scared me at the time. And what I did was I just went from, you know, I just moved the goalposts, you know what I mean? So it was like, okay, so I've got sort of 9 months to stop. You know, she's pregnant. When she gives birth, I'll stop. And then when she gave birth, I sort of gave myself another 6 months because, you know, the baby won't know what's going on, and I'll stop then, you know. And I would have kept, you know, procrastinating around the stopping, you know, I know. But she saw, you know, what was happening long before I was connected with it, and she gave me the elbow, and the abandonment and rejection and anger and rage that I felt towards her for you know, we were meant to, you know, it's meant to be like a lifetime thing that we'd signed up for with each other, do you know what I mean? It's sort of like a kid, with this sort of naive take on relationships and stuff. And I used on that, you know, I used on that hardcore, you know. Crack and heroin were never meant to be part of my journey, but they became part of my journey, and the consequences were just, you know, thick and fast. I was crap at using, That's the truth of it. I was crap at using those kind of drugs. And I suppose the good thing is they brought me to my knees relatively quick. And you know, yeah, treatment, NA. So that was what happened, you know. What I need to talk about is what the very end of my using was like was just total kind of emptiness, really. Total emptiness, total sense of loss. Absolutely no idea about what lie beyond my next use up. And I think addiction is such a, it's just so horrible, really, in that respect, because what my experience was is you know, I mean, I there was always a way out, yeah? There's always a way out. I know that, you know, but because I was so hell-bent on chasing the illusion that the next one would make a difference and would somehow fix me, I never ever went near the way out, you know, because I was too lured by the next one, if that makes sense. And I think that's what's so sad and painful about active using is my disease didn't really want me dead. It just wanted me bumping along in the gutter of life forever, you know. It was just going to be like eternal pain and loss, really. And yeah, I'm so grateful people intervened, you know. People did for me at a time what I couldn't do for myself, and I, you know, and I got clean, and I'm here sharing that with you, you know. And I'm so grateful, you know, so grateful that I got clean, that I got clean via Narcotics Anonymous, via a treatment center. You know, the internal stuff, you know, no one really comes into recovery with anything other than loss. You know, I think loss was the thing that I sat with when I first got here, you know, and had to sit with this sense of loss. And I could go and do another 40 minutes on what that loss looks like. You know, you all know it's addiction takes, it doesn't give, yeah. What I've got back now is, you know, not only what have I got back, but what I've got over and above what, you know, that, you know, Ish was talking about, you know, writing a wish list and stuff, you know, and you know, I couldn't even comprehend what life had in store for me once I got clean and plugged into this stuff. But the most important thing is this internal this internal restructuring that's happened for me through showing up, gradually thawing out in Narcotics Anonymous. And I say gradually, you know, I have not thawed out yet. You know, I still feel like a raw newcomer a lot of the time. And I'm not just being, you know, super modest here or anything. I do genuinely just feel so raw and new sometimes, you know. But the, you know, the degree of acceptance that the 12-step program has provided for me is probably the most important thing, you know. You know, I've come from a place of total self-rejection to a place of acceptance, and that's just that's one of, for me, that's one of the kind of daddy principles, really. You know, there's many, but the rest of the spiritual principles have played their part. They're my new, you know, they're not even my new kind of toolkit for living, but they're renewed, you know, when I pick this program up and reconnect with it, you know, when I choose to do that and access what's here. I've got literally seconds left. What I'm going to just really end on is one of the things that I've got out of coming to Narcotics Anonymous that I could never, ever, ever have bargained on, is this thing called faith, right? Which I had no comprehension of before. You know, I grew up in a community where a massive proportion of the local residents are religious, highly religious, and I always kind of looked on kind of confused and awestruck at what these guys around me seem to have, you know. But what I've done via this fellowship is I've now got some faith, you know. I've ended up being introduced to this concept of a higher power, and I never ever ever bargained on that, you know. Never ever ever in my wildest dreams would I have thought I would have got that into the mix as well. And you know, and as I say, I don't know what my God is at the moment. You know, it's fluctuated, it's moved, it's changed, it's shifted over the time I've been around, and I'm really okay with that. But what I do have is this subtle, quiet sense of faith that no matter what happens, I'll be all right, you know. And I really, you know, I really do encourage people, whether you're new in or whether you're not new in and you've been around for decades, I just really encourage you to just keep coming here and keep holding on to that faith that we have, that really and truly, no matter what happens, if we stay together, you know, we don't use and we try and do this stuff to the best of our ability, then, you know, we'll be okay. And I better leave it there. Thank you.